Folks, we're going to get underway. We do have a quorum. The Representative Van Felt will move the minutes of the March 14th meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. I'll give you a little bit of a roadmap for what we're doing today. We do have, just by the nature of having deadlines upon us, we've got several amendments, frankly non-controversial amendments, to some of these bills that are still in the midst of being drafted. So we may have to sort of recess a little bit here and there. But as long as we have folks in attendance, I thought we'd start with the testimony. We also have Representative Dominguez as well. He's got to be in another committee here momentarily. So I think we're going to get underway with Representative Dominguez's bill. then hopefully as we continue on and take some testimony, we'll get the amendments that we need. And everybody will have ample opportunity to review those amendments to make sure that they are what they purport to be. Representative Dominguez will move that House File 3774 be recommended, passed, and referred to the House floor. Representative Dominguez, it's my understanding there is an amendment.
Yes, there is, Mr. Chair.
And that amendment is in our packet. That's the AO8-1406.
That's correct.
All right, Representative Dominguez moves the AO8-1406 amendment to put the bill in the shape in which the author desires to proceed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. Representative Dominguez, that motion carries to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is related to a comment clarifying the application of the Minnesota residential mortgage. I have a testifier here for questions answered if he wants to introduce himself.
Well, I know he's not Pat Sexton, which it says on our... I also note, by the way, on the agenda that I've got about six people that apparently are here to talk about my bill, which I know is not the case. It's actually, for people's reference, it's for the mortgage deferment bill. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Murphy from the Commerce Department. We have a very short bill here this year. The Chapter 58 of mortgage law provides a lot of protections to both lenders and consumers. Came to our attention over the past year that the scope of Chapter 58 does not clearly cover all 1-to-4 family residential loans. So our change is going to clarify that Chapter 58 covers all 1-to-4 family residential loans. And one of the important reasons to make this change is that last year we made mortgage fraud a specific crime in Minnesota. And that law refers back to the definitions in Chapter 58, so we think this is a good thing. The second item in the bill is a technical change concerning investment powers of health insurance companies to make them consistent with life companies, and that's very technical. There's no controversy associated with that one. And the amendment deals again with Chapter 58, the mortgage licensing law, and what we're proposing here is to extend the record retention schedule from 26 months out to 60 months. We've had so many complaints and investigations concerning the mortgage issues that sometimes records have been destroyed by the time our investigators get to them. So we're pushing back the record retention schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy and Representative Dominguez. Are either one of you aware of any opposition to the bill?
Not that I'm aware of, but we did speak with the Minnesota Mortgage Association, Pat Martin, who's behind us here, and they're okay with it. They just want to let you know that.
Thank you. And I'll ask, are there any others that desire to testify with respect to House File 3774? Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Dominguez will renew his motion that House File 3774 be recommended, passed, as amended, and referred to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carried. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next up is, we've got two bills on which Representative Dabney, are you aware of, you have one amendment, is that correct?
There may be more than one amendment, my understanding certainly there's still a lot there,
right.
And not yet.
But you have, as far as these amendments go, you've got a single amendment, is that your understanding?
I do believe so.
Okay. Because I think what we'll do is, and I know that we're awaiting some amendments with respect to my bill, which is the fascinating one regarding coverages and contracts and filings and so forth. But I think in view of, just by a show of hands, who's all here on Representative Dabney's bill, 3612? And who's all here on my bill?
Whoa!
Give or take. I think out of deference to the members of the committee, then we'll do the chair's bill last. We may come back to that one. What we'll do, folks, is just take whichever one on which the amendments are prepared soonest. But I think it's fair to go to Representative Dabney's bill at this point. We'll take testimony. Representative Dabney, I'm assuming you want to move House File 3612. Be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice. And we'll pick up the amendments when they arrive.
All right. Just a moment to find my two signatures. So I'm going to vote that time.
Some people just heard you'll move to table.
Let me get the microphone back. Could we do a wrong? Could we do a pause meter on that?
You know what? That's not beyond this committee. We'd like to get a sense of where folks are coming from. All right, Representative Dabney to House File 3783.
How about 3612?
Let's say 3612.
Okay.
Just trying to make my life easy. Carrying my bill, too.
That's right. Well, it's a gripping bill. I've read it.
Yes, indeed. All right. House File 3612 is before us. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as the discussion has indicated, I do expect one or two amendments to come down from staff and wish to deal with them at that time. Members, House File 3612 creates the Minnesota Subprime Foreclosure Deferment Act of 2008. It's a response to the current crisis in foreclosures across our state and across the nation. In January of 2008, Hennepin County, the state's most populous county, saw the highest number of foreclosures in history. And in fact, across the state, we are at the highest number of foreclosures in history. Some counties in rural Minnesota last year saw as much as a 200% increase in home foreclosures. This has been crippling on our economy and devastating to many families across the state. House File 3612 is a narrowly crafted, bold, but balanced response to that crisis, providing a tightly bracketed group of homeowners an opportunity for, and their lenders, an opportunity to work together and an opportunity for more tools to come forward from local, county, state, and federal governments, as well as the nonprofit and for-profit sectors. Those carefully bracketed borrowers are owner-occupants who are committed to staying in their home for the entire deferment period and who are able to make the stipulated mortgage payments in the bill. In other words, members, this is a balanced approach that assures not only the borrower's time to renegotiate the loan in a mutually agreeable and mutually beneficial way with the lenders, but assures lenders with an ongoing source of revenue that they do not have under the foreclosure process. The homeowners would be required to continue to make those payments. Those who fail would lose the deferment and the foreclosure process would continue. There are many homeowners who sadly will not be helped by this bill. As we look at homeowners who are over their heads and underwater on their mortgages. But we can avoid preventable foreclosures in Minnesota by establishing this deferment period. With me today, to assist with the bill, is Professor Prentice Cox from the University of Minnesota Law School.
Cox, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Professor Prentice Cox, University of Minnesota Law School. I will walk through the bill very briefly, if you'd like, Chair. The bill sets forth four criteria for borrowers who are eligible. The four criteria are that it's a subprime or negative amortization loan, that it was originated from 2001 through August 31st, 2007, which is the effective date of the anti-predatory lending law that was passed last, that was passed last session, that the borrower is a resident occupant of the home and has been for the last 6 months and intends to and will occupy the property for the period of the deferment, and finally that the borrower can make substantial payments, which is defined in the bill specifically, during the deferment period. The rest of the bill I'm happy to take questions about, but is an attempt to provide efficient and expeditious notices and so that everyone is clear about responsibilities under the bill. It is incumbent, a couple of the important provisions are that it's incumbent upon the borrower to file, to initiate the process to file the affidavit of deferment. There's no automatic right granted here. It's just the opportunity to file the affidavit of deferment, indicating eligibility under the conditions and willingness to make the payment. The second important provision is if the payments are not made in a timely manner, which again is defined in the bill, the borrower immediately loses the right to deferment. So this is something where both parties have a responsibility under the bill, and it's an attempt to have shared responsibility for the crisis that we're facing today.
Mr. Cox, and I think what we're going to do is we'll probably go through the testimony and then we'll see what questions that people have. So thank you very much. Representative Dabney, anyone else?
Also testifying on behalf of the bill is Mr. Allen. I'm going to butcher the gentleman's last name.
We don't see you talking.
My apologies.
Welcome to the committee. You just identify for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Al Enigus, and I live in Apple Valley, Minnesota. And I have been a music teacher for over 45 years, and I do teach out of my home in Apple Valley. The way I got myself into this predatory loan is because I trusted someone. I was looking to buy a home, and one of my students, who I've been teaching for about 5 years, was a broker, and he said he could help me. He put me into a subprime loan that was not in my best interest. He took advantage of my trust. Right now, I am behind in my mortgages. The payments right now are about $2,400 a month, and I'm paying 11.125 interest, and next month it's going to jump up to 13.9. Yes, I am near foreclosure right now. Because of this, it has really drastically changed my life. I have to watch my spending, and now I only eat like one meal a day. You know, I have cut out all entertainment. I don't buy any new clothes, and I'm relying on the generosity of some of my students to actually bring me some food. And yet I am willing, able, and ready to keep my home. House file 3612 will help me immensely. It will allow me some wiggle breathing room and some time to work out with my lender to renegotiate this offer loan to really to get into a decent living loan. I hope that the federal government will come up with a solution in this pervasive problem. Mr. Chair and members of this committee, this is a good bill, and it will not only help me but a number of other people facing the same situation. There are thousands of taxpayers and voters out there that are in this situation. And I really thank you for your audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Enigus. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney?
I believe that's all the witnesses in favor, but I understand that a few other folks in the room might have some concerns.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. We'll hear from whether you're on the list or not. We'll hear from everybody that wants to have a say with respect to this. I do have a number of whom that made us aware of their desire to testify, Mr. Martin and then Mr. Witt. Or Mr. Witt and then Mr. Martin. I mean, whatever order you prefer, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Joe Witt. I'm President and CEO of the Minnesota Bankers Association. I appreciate the opportunity to come and testify on this bill here today. Minnesota Bankers Association represents about 450 banks that have offices in the state of Minnesota. All of our member banks are very keenly interested in this foreclosure issue as you're looking at various bills that have come through this committee and will come through this committee. We participated in all the working groups and all the task forces in the interim, and we think those task forces and working groups did some very good work, coming up with as many as 11 or 12 different bills that we supported. There was a good give and take among all the stakeholders with respect to those bills, and we're happy to be one of the groups that definitely supports all of those bills that are addressing specific problems and trying to fix specific concerns with Minnesota's foreclosure process. When we look at this foreclosure situation and when we analyze all the bills that have come up this year, we analyze it from our lender's standpoint, from the standpoint as the banks, as lenders, but we also look at it from a standpoint of what's going to be best for our communities. The banks that we represent, again, the ones that are here in Minnesota, have a very vested interest in making sure that they have livable communities and that they have strong neighborhoods. So we do really look at this as a partnership between our institutions and our communities. We agree that there needs to be, in these very difficult and challenging times, we agree that there needs to be more credit to these areas and not less credit. So we're very concerned that some of these proposals that we're looking at this year could go too far. And if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hand out an article from the Star Tribune, an editorial. The gist of this is that, it's acknowledging that there's a severe problem out there, and like Representative Dabney said, there are some unprecedented numbers of foreclosures. But this editorial also mentions that it is possible to go too far with legislation, and it actually urges in here that you take a step back and make sure that you're not going too far with any possible legislation. So if I could, I'd like to hand that out.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. We'll make sure that staff passes that out.
I also wanted to mention that a lot of the lenders in the mortgage community have been working very hard to work with borrowers who find themselves in these situations. There's an alliance called Hope Now, which is a group of lenders and servicers. I just was reading in their press information that they have now assisted more than 1 million borrowers with either loan modifications or repayment plans. I bring that up because I think that those lenders are doing the assistance correctly, in that what they're doing is they're analyzing individual situations of individual borrowers, and they're trying to figure out what is best for each individual situation. We do have concerns with the state imposing one particular remedy, which may not be best in all the borrower situations. I wanted to raise a couple of other concerns that we had with the bill. The first one is some regulatory issues. As you know from being on this committee, the banks are some of the most heavily regulated businesses we have. And one of the concerns that we have, and I don't know if I've had a chance to talk with the author about this one yet, but one of the concerns that we have with this particular situation is the regulatory treatment of these loans and how the federal and state examiners would look at these loans that are delinquent. We have, as a regulated industry, the safety and soundness of the financial institutions is the number one priority of the examiners, and I would want to make sure that the federal and the state examiners knew how to classify these loans that would now be significantly past due, and I would want to know what the regulatory treatment of those would be in case there would be any additional capital requirements or anything else that would be triggered by carrying loans like this that are significantly past due on our books. We also have some major concerns about the state modifying contracts, in essence, and I know there's probably people in the room that are better suited to talk about whether this raises any constitutional concerns and things like that, and I guess probably the Civil Law Committee might be the better place to take up those issues. But I think there are probably some concerns in this area that we want to at least get on the record. I also have some questions about the timing of the bill. I saw that the effective date, I think, was the day following enactment. And for our lenders, I think that would raise some significant concerns. There's a couple of actions that the lenders are going to need to do right away. Right away, the day following enactment, people could start filing these affidavits of deferment. And the responsibility on the lender's part is that the lender shall properly provide a written acknowledgement once they receive one of these affidavits, and then if they're going to deny the eligibility of the borrower, they would have 5 business days to do that within receiving that affidavit. With an effective date, that's basically the day after enactment. I think it would be really tough for us to get our banks up to speed, but even more importantly, there's banks all over the country that would be affected by this bill. That would also have to be brought up to speed so that they would have a chance to be in compliance with this new law. And I know the idea of the bill is to become effective as quickly as possible so you can help as many people as possible, but I wonder if that isn't maybe a little too quick to ensure compliance with the new law. One of the other concerns that we've had, and I know there are some other folks that wanted to testify to this, again, I think in these areas that are hard hit by foreclosures, I think we really need to do whatever we can to increase the amount of credit that's flowing to these areas rather than inhibiting credit or making credit more costly. And I think there is a real concern that you could see credit drying up in these areas, and we think that is a legitimate concern that needs to be balanced within this bill. And my last point that I'll make in my long-winded testimony here today is when I read through this bill, I think the first couple times, I was surprised that the bill didn't include what happens to the money that's deferred. When the borrower is making this 65% payment and deferring 35% of it, or whatever, however the math works out under the other opportunities that they have to defer payments, I was surprised that the bill didn't address what happens to that money that's not paid, whether that becomes part of the loan principal or just exactly what happens with it. I was just surprised that that wasn't included in the bill itself as to what happens with it, to that money. So, with that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions either now or whenever the time is for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. I believe we're going to take questions later, so please stick around. Mr. Martin? Is there a Mr. Martin? Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Martin, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Mortgage Association. To testify today in opposition to this bill because I think that the fact of the matter is, and we will hear from one more testifier, I'm sure, when he arrives, that we have a very, very damaging letter that you should all have a copy of. It's the letter from the American Securitization Forum and the Securities Industry Financial Markets Association. I would invite you to pull that letter from your folder because I'll be making a few references to that. Looks something like this, except without the notes. The reason why I'm drawing your attention to that letter is that is a nuclear letter for us. what this letter says is that credits in Minnesota will become more expensive and in some cases unavailable. Now this is a critical letter for us because we have never received this letter before here in Minnesota, nor do I know of other states anywhere at any time that they've received this letter. What does this mean? Well, the financial markets that supply money for the mortgage market do so in a format called securitization. That is, mortgages are originated, and then they are bundled together, and then they are sold to entities like our pension plans, money markets, and other things like that. So for them to tell us that they're going to pass on Minnesota mortgages is an extraordinarily serious comment, because it will, in effect, if this is true, shut down the Minnesota mortgage market to a large extent. You might ask me why we have supported the other 7 or 8 foreclosure bills that are making their way through the legislature, why we supported last year's predatory lending legislation, but we're raising a ruckus on this one. It's because of the contents of this letter. And whatever the merits of the bill, and whatever the merits, their highly laudable goals to help Minnesotans in foreclosure, the fact of the matter is that we are threatened here in Minnesota with a mortgage money shutdown. And that's the reason that we're objecting to this bill and hoping that it doesn't go forward. Those are very serious words, and I know that you're taken to heart. I don't have the ability to stamp a 100% veracity emblem on this letter. All I can tell you is that it seems to me that it's a very, very damaging letter to have even been issued. Not known in history that this has ever been done before. And so this makes me very, very nervous. So, kind of conclude.
I'm sorry, there was a question. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. Where is this magic letter?
I'm sorry, I thought it was in your folder.
Yeah, it's in the folder.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Martin. Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, it is to some extent a silver bullet letter. And this is so important to us, we need to draw your attention to it. In the letter itself, you can see that the language that they have indicates in the last phrase of the first paragraph, this legislation would, if enacted, impose substantial costs and threaten the future availability of mortgage credit to all Minnesotans. On the next page, says at the bottom, the last sentence of paragraph 2, in either case, all mortgage borrowers in Minnesota will bear substantially greater costs and find fewer opportunities for affordable mortgage financing in a market environment already deprived of adequate access to affordable credit. The letter makes this comment 3 or 4 times through the course of the letter. We basically have no control over the securitization market because these folks operate on a national and international level. They provide funds to the Minnesota market. Virtually all Minnesota mortgages have to go through this securitization process. So for us to receive a letter like this is extraordinarily damaging and quite intimidating. Now, people have said, but you know what, Pat, you've used this argument before when you said that a particular piece of legislation is going to kill credit in Minnesota. Yep, I have. And in all cases, legislators who have authored the bills have been willing to make changes and modifications to the legislation, witness the predatory lending language from last year,
witnessed the foreclosure language this year that has ameliorated the effect and the impact on the securities market. If we don't have this money from outside the state, we are not going to be able to make mortgages. What is the impact of that? Well, as you know from previous testimony on the foreclosure and predatory lending issues, we have an enormous number of mortgages that are coming due. We have a lot of ARMs that are resetting, adjustable rate mortgages that are resetting. So we have a huge number of mortgages that are going to have to be rewritten in 08 and in 09. If we don't have the money available, we will not be able to make those mortgages. And in effect, we will have poured gasoline on the fire of foreclosure already. We are absolutely finding the market to be decimated by the large number of foreclosures. We don't want anybody to have to face that. It's a terrible, horrible thing. And it has horrible consequences for the communities in which these foreclosures are made. We just don't think that we should roll dice and probably cause more foreclosures rather than fewer. Alright.
Thank you very much, sir. A quick question, because I think we're going to take questions.
Quick.
Representative Angela.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, sir, what is your remedy to the 17 emails, 43 letters, and over 100 phone calls from people facing immediate crisis?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anzo, the best remedy would be one that was similar to when we faced this issue in the past. We've had a couple of times through our state's history, most notably
farm foreclosure.
Yes, and before that, during the Great Depression, which I see everybody here at the table is too young to remember. But we've heard the story.
You too.
Me too? I was representing the Phoenicians at that time. I've been around a long time.
What were they paying?
Assyrian money. Okay.
He's good.
You good. Sorry about that. There was a federally developed response by President Roosevelt, because he found, and this is from history, from a read of history, that there were about two-thirds of the mortgages that were under severe jeopardy back then. And so the federal government established a corporation that was known as a Federal Homeowners Relief Organization, which then disbanded in 1951. Because it had done its job. It was a success. And basically, they did the sorts of things that lenders are supposed to be doing now, which is to talk to the consumer and rewrite some of these loans, enter into all sorts of remedies to allow the homeowners either additional time or perhaps a reduced interest rate or perhaps... Okay. All of those things, but it was done by the federal government. This particular situation, I would argue, cries out for that same sort of address, which is a federal program. Now, I know that you'll probably say, but they won't come quick enough, they won't do it well enough, and all of those sorts of things. While that's true, it doesn't debase my central point, which is that the mortgage money available for the future apparently will not be coming here because they will skip us when the mortgages are dealt.
Well, Roosevelt and Floyd Olson aren't here anymore, so
that's right.
I don't have much confidence in that answer.
Okay. Representative Mahoney, and then we're going to take some questions. I guess we're going to take some questions here. I want to make sure we get some from the Republicans as well. If they have them, I want to, you know, and like the fair and balance from Fox News, so we want to... Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Martin, my committee has heard time and time again from venture capital this year
as we tried to find money for business startups in the state. And the thing I hear from them time and time again is money will flow to wherever money can be made often. Now, I look around this room, and maybe there's 100 people here. And we all, having looked at my mortgage, just a rough guess, maybe there's about $250,000 worth of interest being made on the mortgages in this room. You're going to tell me that in this state of hundreds of millions of dollars a month in money to be made, we're not going to get money in this state? I find that very hard to believe. To be honest to God, and you know, I don't think Jim looks like either Floyd or Franklin himself.
Come on, Mr. Chairman, that's been the only. No, I'm not going to tell you that. As a matter of fact, I hope that there is. It's the security people that are telling you that.
And then the ones that are just driving our credit, driving our bankruptcies and our whole financial markets into the toilet?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Martin.
Representative Mahoney? I know that there's a substantial amount of anger about the internationals and the national non-Minnesota state effort that funds these loans. I know that it's a sad thing that we've actually stopped funding the loans from our Main Street banks, and before that our Main Street savings and loans. But Mr. Potter and the gang aren't here anymore either, along with Mr. Roosevelt and the governor. So they're gone. So now we're faced with sort of the reality show, which is dealing with these folks that cover our loans that are national and international. And so it is they that are saying this, and that's what makes me stutter step.
Representative Mahoney?
Any follow-up? Or?
Well, no, I think I asked my question. Can I ask the author of the bill question?
Yes, sir.
Sure, I like that. Often I don't get that. President Dabney, how many other states are in the process or are following or have already enacted a bill similar to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I at this point am not aware of other states who are doing a deferment. I'm aware that the state senate in the state of Virginia unanimously passed a moratorium, which is a much more dramatic act than this. This is not, despite the contention of several testifiers, a interference with contract. It speaks not at all to the contract between the borrower and the lender. It merely speaks to the foreclosure process in state law. A moratorium would in fact be an interference with contract. If I may, Mr. Chair, I appreciated Representative Mahoney's questioning regarding the letter from the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association and the American Securitization Forum. And I'll try to save some of my vitriol. Mr. Martin and I visited my office at a fair length today. He got some of this in. He probably doesn't need to hear it again. And we have a, I believe, mutually respectful relationship, and have it today and we'll have it tomorrow. But I point out on page 3, they say in the top paragraph, pension and mutual funds are large buyers of AAA mortgage-backed securities, and any reduction in the value of these securities will be reflected in the value of those pension and mutual funds. Let's reflect for a moment on Wall Street. The value of mortgage-backed securities is the question they dare not ask because they're terrified of the answer. And lastly, let me walk through a little math. And I even used a calculator on some of it. Minnesota has roughly 5 million people. We have one of the highest home ownership rates in the country, 70%. That means 3.5 million Minnesotans live in owner-occupied properties. I believe, and if there's anyone in the audience who can correct me if I'm wrong, I will welcome that, but I believe the average Minnesota family is 2.8 people. We'll skip the docking caps right now. I rounded up to 3. 3.5 million people, 3 people per house, a little less than that. Works out to be about 1.2 million owner-occupied properties in Minnesota. we estimate, based on hard data on the number of, on market share of different lenders in Minnesota the last number of years, that the mortgage deferment act will provide opportunity for about 12,000 people, 12,000 families, excuse me, to work out their loans with their borrowers. 1%, 1% of Minnesota homeowners. And to provide that 1% of Minnesota homeowners with an opportunity to work out a mutually beneficial agreement with their lender, we get a threatening letter from the very people who brought the American economy to its knees and the real estate market to its flat on its face. Is this committee going to be cowed by the very people who've done the damage and deny 12,000 families the opportunity to keep paying on their mortgage, stay in their homes, and find a way to make it work for their lenders? Sorry.
Representative Mahoney, do you have a follow-up for any?
No, I'm done for the time being. I get other people, but...
Representative Maury?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We stated that the Republicans wanted to. I'm willing to wait if they have some questions.
I think chaos is reigning here, kind of at this point.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly like Representative Mahoney's shirt today.
I got a lot of comments in this. This is just one of many greens that I have.
I've got a sport coat almost set. Right. my question is, you stated that you prefer the type of thing that I think you were getting at, Mr. Martin, and I want to say, first of all, we have some considerable disagreements on various things, but I thank you for working with us. And but I think you said something like the Federal Reserve Chairman's suggestion that these lenders do more like complying with what the how do you suggest on their loans that they have to work before they can apply for anything, that they have to work out, prove that they've worked with the to mitigate and change the terms and things like that. I know that he came out, I think it was the Federal Reserve Chairman, and suggested that about 3 weeks ago, roughly, that they have to rework the terms and things like that, and that it should be done just as you, I'm sure you're aware, HUD in their mitigation part, their handout, before you can claim, they have to go through that type of thing. They call it good faith negotiation. Is that something that you're now saying that is appropriate? What the basically what the Federal Reserve Chairman was saying?
Mr. Martin. Or the author, I'm not sure who is.
Who's
the
no, I know it's from Mr. Martin.
Mr. Martin,
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mullery, would that be somewhat similar to what is in your bill 4612? Is that?
It's part of it.
Okay. I have to admit that I don't know all of the ins and outs of the way HUD is suggesting that this be approached. But I do favor the idea of making, for want of a better set of words, the lenders responsible for trying to work out these issues with homeowners. A central problem that we face in this sort of attempt to do this sort of mitigating work is that 50% of the homeowners don't connect with the lender when they know that they're going to default. And it's been an extraordinarily difficult time, as Representative Mullery, you probably know from your extraordinarily fruitful discussions, and Representative Abney, you were part of this too during the summer when we were trying to study this effort. And I will say that
Thank you for the kind comments, Representative Abney, about the mutual respect thing, and I won't touch that with this we did do a lot of work, all of us, around Representative Mulley, Representative Abney, some other Senator Higgins, and the advocates and the industry. And please ask the question, why would it be that we're supporting all those other foreclosure bills, the predatory lending legislation, but are kicking over the nail can on this one and making so much noise? And it is because of this group of people. And regardless, I would submit, regardless of what we think about these folks that are financing these loans, they do have, to some extent, the keys to the kingdom. And so I'm worried about the future impact and the consequence when they tell everybody what it is that they're going to do. It's like, you know, when I was at home and my mother, a wonderful advocate for all things orderly in the Martin household, would say, quit screwing up or I'm going to tell your dad. If I had received a four-page text message from my dad saying that there was going to be a consequence, I guess I would have believed that there would be one. And that's what I think that we have in our hands.
Mr. Chairman, I want to follow up on a couple things here. First of all, Representative Anthony, this is nowhere near the kind of bill that Georgia had, but Georgia did have their funds cut off, and they immediately had a reconvene a special legislative session to repeal a law, but this is nothing like that. So, but Mr. Martin, what I'm trying to find out is, do these people disagree then with what the Federal Reserve Chairman said should be done on the mortgage? Okay, that's one question. Second one, I don't think I got your answer is long, but I don't think I got an answer to my question. And the third one would be, well, I'll get to the third one once you answer the first two.
All right. Mr. Martin. Representative Mulvey, I don't know what their opinion is on the Federal Reserve Board. They probably have opined on this, and as a matter of fact, I think that we now have a testifier in the room that can probably add some information to this sort of meager display that I put on here today. Yes, we do. Okay. He's actually from the folks that wrote this letter. And I know that he was meeting with the Commerce Secretary in D.C. earlier, and he really can be much better to answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, okay, go ahead. Can you ask this, answer my second question so I can ask my third question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulvey, I feel that web tightening, sir. But, I think, yes, I think that we would prefer some sort of acknowledgement that if borrowers are currently in negotiation with lenders on their foreclosure, that they would then probably be better served to continue those negotiations. Not going to make a pejorative comment, but maybe the 65% that was earmarked in this bill would be too much or too little of a repayment schedule. It might be better to have some flexibility and let the lender and the consumer decide on that. Did I answer it this time?
Representative Mulvey.
Kind of. And I'll go on to my third question then, which is why in my working group did all of the lenders people oppose good faith negotiation requirements?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulvey,
in view of the fact that now it's considered a good idea. Mr. Chair. Mr. Martin, continuing my question, in view that now that the Federal Reserve Chairman has come out for that, and it's admitted by a lot of the people on this side that it's a good deal, why is that opposed before? It doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Martin, please try and answer again without being interrupted.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate Representative guidance on this formation of this answer. But the truth is, Representative Mulvey, I think that in August,
honestly, the markets were in a substantially different position. There have been 250 or so mortgage lending companies that have now failed. And the acceleration, the pace with which mortgage lenders are failing, and the impact of large investment banking organizations, as you noted, if you're looking at your Blackberries today, you see that Bear Stearns is down to being sold, I guess, for $2 a share when it was 40 on Friday. So the fact of the matter is that the Minnesota decision makers at this legislature have been more prescient, I think, just about always, than the rest of the nation, state specifically, in their treatment of things like predatory lending and fraud and those items. And I think that you should take great honor in the fact that your bills that you authored last time on predatory lending last legislature have become templates for the national legislators in Congress to look at and suggest as national solutions. On this one, I think that the diminution of the market's vitality has accelerated enormously since we had those conversations even last summer. And I think that you would have found a different set of responses to your suggestion had that been 6 months later.
Just a quick point, even in December and January, your side was not willing to accept that, but could we have the answer from who you called the expert, and then I'm done with my question.
Okay. Or can
sometime before we're done, can you bring that other guy?
Okay, we'll bring him up. Mr. Martin, there's possibly one more question. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, I guess. You know, looking at the information before me here, I do think it is a mistake to wait cautiously and for a length of time for the federal government to make a response. That's some of the initiatives I've seen that have been helpful to the working class folks here in the state of Minnesota come from the states, whether it's clean air and clean water or energy or health care. And the kind of work that I see Mr. Dabney presenting here is just another example of that. And you mentioned the work that Representative Mulry did last year that provided a template for the kind of things that are being done nationally. So I wouldn't dismiss the initiatives that put forth here. I think, in fact, it's quite powerful and can have a lasting impact on legislation not only in the state but nationally.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Mulry.
And Representative Johnson, you had a great point there, and we should have perhaps focus a little bit more on that. Some of the ideas that have come out of Minnesota have actually been national templates then for Congress going forward. And we think that the, I'll call it a partnership, it might not have always felt like that, but it has been a bit of a partnership between the decision makers, legislators that are here in this room, and also the advocate community, homeowners themselves, but also the industry. And that's made it different than in most states where they try and struggle with these sorts of issues, and they're at each other's throats all the time, and it's very difficult. On the specific thought that on clean air, clean water, and those sorts of things, you know, with the emission standards and whatnot, I have to admit I was thinking about that today, and as I was stuck in traffic with all these cars around me, the point I'd like to make is that there will be access to water at a particular level. There will be access to the purchase of cars, maybe at a different level, but on mortgages, if the switch is shut off, there isn't access to used mortgages. You have to have new, and if the money isn't here, it's difficult. And so that's a little bit different from the rest of Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Are there other questions or concerns for Ms. Martin? Otherwise, I know that we've got another gentleman that wishes to share his testimony with us. Thank you, Ms. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Deutsch? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. I understand you had a little bit of an effort to get here, and we appreciate that. If you just identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
to Tom Deutsch, the Deputy Executive Director of the American Securitization Forum, and I do apologize for my late arrival. I was in Washington with the Treasury Secretary this morning.
Did you get everything straight in the way?
We're all set. Tomorrow will be a brighter day.
Yeah. Mr. Deutsch, thank you for joining us. And we did, just, I believe everyone has your written testimony or comments within our packet. If there's anything you'd like to amplify, though, you're certainly welcome to do so.
Great. And do you just want me to take just a couple minutes, kind of an overview?
I do know that most members are familiar with what you've shared in your letter. So if there's high points that you want to emphasize, then I want to give folks an opportunity
Let me maybe amplify on some things that aren't on the letter. I think that might be critical. I think everybody's had a fair chance to read through, and we can certainly go through any details or questions that people might want to ask. But I have heard that a number of people have questioned, is this crying wolf effectively? Is this the secondary market, or is this the primary market? Crying wolf and saying, if you go through with this, all Minnesotans are going to suffer. Let me just share a little bit of personal experience with you from a couple of initiatives that a couple of other states and localities have passed and then rescinded in the past. First was the Georgia Fair Lending Act in 2002. Effectively, this act assigned significant liability to the secondary market, an unquantifiable liability. At the time, people praised it as groundbreaking, as going to be the state template for every other state. We and others testified that it would be very difficult for the secondary market to be able to fund mortgage credit after the passage of this law. In 2002, for five straight months, not a single major mortgage lender in Georgia originated a mortgage loan that was securitized that would have been eligible, that would have been covered by this act. That's 5 months that mortgages were not originated in that state. The state rescinded that legislation then after those 5 months, acknowledging the negative consequences that they didn't see coming because of that bill. Unfortunately, a year later, Montgomery County, Maryland also passed a similar piece of legislation. The same effect happened. Very few lenders, if any, were willing to extend mortgage credit because of all the consequences and negative liability associated with it. So within a week, the Montgomery County Council rescinded that same piece of legislation with the same concern that they recognized the negative implications associated with passage of that bill. I think what we find today is a similar situation. With this bill, the two primary aims that it has, to have a 12-month foreclosure moratorium and to have a 35% write-down effectively for those 12 months for those borrowers' payments. Those three things. One, it incentivizes borrowers, whether they're troubled or not, to go through the foreclosure process, so they have a 12-month moratorium as well as a 35% write-down. Second, and more importantly, it creates instability in the secondary market, because what you've just done is told lenders, and ultimately the institutional investors who own the mortgage-backed securities, that may no longer have the ability to exercise the contractual rights under the contract. Third, and most importantly, is it explicitly changes the contractual terms of the underlying mortgage loan. Let me repeat that. It explicitly changes the contractual terms of the underlying mortgage loan. Every lawyer who works in securitization, in structured finance, in mortgage markets, knows that it's critical, it's a foundation to extend credit to borrowers, that if you don't have the legal and contractual rights to be able to enforce those contracts as their terms are written, then those contracts become unsustainable over time. And then risk premiums get demanded by those who are funding those mortgage credits over time. This is how the secondary market works. Very simple, very functional. That how the market works is if you provide mortgage credit, you expect to be able to be repaid for that mortgage credit over time. By impairing those contracts, by signaling that Minnesota is not willing to live up to its contractual obligations, I think it does a very great harm. And it's, although the bill may be very well-intentioned, it creates some very negative, unintentional consequences that ultimately, for all Minnesotans, not just subprime borrowers, all Minnesotans will have reduced access to credit, and whatever credit is available will be significantly more expensive. So with that, I'd invite any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Joyce. Are there questions or concerns at this point? Representative Muller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the same question that was referred to you by
Mr. Martin that I had. I think you were in the room, weren't you?
I barely caught the details of it. Let me just inquire again.
It was basically, right now in the HUD mitigation, there's a requirement of good faith negotiations. And now the chairman of the Federal Reserve, I believe it was him 3 weeks ago, came out and said that the lender should be doing the write down on the terms and interest rates and things like that, and looking at the value of the mortgage and the security and everything like that. Does this group believe in what the Federal Reserve Chairman said and or the HUD mitigation rules?
I'm a little unclear as to what you're asking on the HUD mitigation rules. I can speak quite personally on Chairman Bernanke's remarks last week. Immediately after Chairman Bernanke's remarks, we did release a statement describing those remarks. And I think what you found over the past 6 months is that the secondary market and the mortgage industry has worked very quickly, and over a million borrowers have been helped thus far nationwide to work with borrowers who have difficulties with their ability to pay their mortgages. What I think Chairman Bernanke was referring to and what is concerning is when a borrower has an ability to pay, but they no longer have a willingness to pay. And these are very, very separate issues that require very different tools to address, both in the mortgage market. Because the fundamental difference on a willingness to pay is that if a borrower doesn't have a willingness to pay, yet they are contractually bound to that payment, but then you say, we're going to write down your principal. Who else in this room would raise their hand to have their principal written down? I would suspect everyone who owns a home who would like to have less principal owed on their mortgage. Absolutely. So I think Chairman Bernanke's remarks, although I think they're very well-intentioned, and I think they do have significant concern for the secondary market, is that principal write-downs do occur right now in limited circumstances where it's appropriate, and where there's a plus factor, in a sense, where a borrower may be underwater and they're experiencing a life event, say loss of a spouse or loss of job. But in situations where a borrower just finds themselves in a housing market downturn, where their home isn't worth as much as they paid for it, that's not necessarily something that lenders or the government should be thinking to bail out.
Is there more? I still don't think I have an answer. The HUD has specific mitigation talk on that big packet on mitigation before you can file.
Before you can file
for a payment by HUD on a mortgage. And it requires good faith negotiation in that.
Mm-hmm.
Bernanke was, to the best of my knowledge, he was talking about requiring, and he didn't get real specific, but I think he mentioned the value of the property also, but I know that he mentioned bringing the terms down to look at what the person could afford, much like your initial probably HUD mortgages or ones that are controlled by the banking regulations. They have, you have to look at what percentage they can pay and stuff like that. A lot of the subprime just totally blows those conditions away. That's what this is targeted at. So,
well, if you do me the favor, just not talking over. We tape record it, so we want to make sure that the speaker is recognized. Mr. Deutsch.
Sure. I guess a couple concerns that I would have with the implications is that one of the major aspects that services are doing right now with every borrower who calls in is they're working with those borrowers to see if they have an ability to repay their mortgage loans. And those are the key areas where servicers are actively reaching out to those borrowers. Not only are those servicers working with borrowers, and again, over a million borrowers have been helped since last July, we've also announced on December 6th, and endorsed by the Treasury Secretary as well as President Bush, is a streamlined framework where if you have certain characteristics in your mortgage loan, you're eligible for a fast track to loan modification. So that as opposed to paying a higher resetting rate, you're frozen at your introductory rate, which we, over the next 2 weeks, will be expanding the number of borrowers that will be eligible for that, so it will not apply not only to their initial rate, but also subsequent rates as well. So I think, in answer to your question, every servicer is working with borrowers who have an ability to pay. The question is, on some issues, is if they have a willingness to pay, is that appropriate to write down principal. And I think in many of those circumstances, it would probably be inappropriate, both for the secondary market concerns, the originator concerns, even as well as the borrower, to be able to write down those. Because those are situations, oftentimes, where the borrowers found themselves in a housing market that has turned on them and turned to the negative.
Ms. Bridge, Representative Murray? Is there anyone else that, thank you, Mr. Deutsch. Appreciate your comments. Representative Ellis.
As Mr. Deutsch is at the table. Mr. Deutsch, in some of the foreclosed homes, are some of the dollars we're talking about here, would they be lent to folks who would be buying up some of these foreclosed homes?
Mr. Deutsch.
Could you repeat the question?
The foreclosed homes that are going to be, people are walking away from, they're going to be bought by someone. Either lenders are going to hold the money, or they're going to have to refinance and sell them off to a secondary company. Will some of the dollars that we discussed, that you discussed in your letter being unavailable, would those dollars be used for those purchases?
Absolutely. If credit is curtailed, that credit will not be there for those purchases. If there are foreclosed homes, they go through an REO process, a real estate owned process, where that lender, or that servicer effectively, will sell those homes off into to the market just generally. What is critically important is that credit is available right now to be able to buy those homes for other borrowers who want to be in those homes, who want to be able to buy those homes and have the ability to afford those homes.
Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Deutsch. So using the Georgia example, even though we were told that's not similar, but using the Georgia example, what happened to those homes? I mean, obviously, if the money wasn't being lent, what happened to those homes? They obviously sat empty. Who is responsible? Who is paying out on those then?
But during those 5 months, no originations were occurring, so there's very few people who were able to move from home to home. So homes effectively would be staying empty at a time when credit is curtailed or non-existent.
Representative Ellis, anything further?
Not for now, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Other questions or comments? If not, Representative Dabney renews his call. Representative LaForce.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple questions for the author. Representative Dabney, one of the comments that Mr. Martin made, talking about the amount that is deferred, and the bill is called the deferment. Let's take the subpart 2 example on line 12, let's say a 65% minimum monthly payment. What does happen to the other 35%? I mean, does it accrue interest or does it disappear? What's the status of the deferred amount? And especially if the borrower ends up defaulting on the deferment, and of course they lose the protections of the deferment under your bill. What happens to that money that's deferred?
Representative Forrest, for us to get into that would be an impairment of contract. By stipulating what happens to that money. This bill does not constitute an impairment of contract. We allow each borrower and each lender to work out individually a mutually agreeable and mutually beneficial solution. They can decide that to, as Chair Bernanke has called for, a reduction in principal. They can choose a reduction in interest rate. They can move payments around. They can lengthen the loan. They can the state has programs, and others have programs to provide financial assistance to borrowers. The answer would be on a case-by-case basis because we don't determine that in this bill.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up, then Representative Dabney, if that is the case, then would it be acceptable under your bill, in your view, for a mortgagee, for example, to require that the amounts be escrowed with interest, for example? Would that be acceptable under your bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Forrest, I need clarification. Are you saying, well, if the borrower and the lender agree to that, I don't think my opinion gets in between the two of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gavney. I'm honestly trying to understand how the bill would work then. So if the mortgage lender wanted the amount to be escrowed or wanted interest or wanted some type of term regarding the deferred amount, they would not have the right to do that if the if the borrower disagreed. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, what are the other points? I think one of the challenges with this bill is everyone's looking for it to be a Bigfoot stomping on borrowers and lenders, and it's not. We have two tools available to us as the legislature. We have axes, and we have scalpels. This is a scalpel that simply allows mortgage lenders and mortgage borrowers to explore the shared risk that a mortgage is intended to be and come up with a mutually agreed solution that can be whatever they agreed to be. We do not attempt to stipulate in this bill or mandate in this bill any cause of action or any solution to individual borrower and individual lender's agreement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I did have one other question, but it seems to me we've lost the claim of mutuality once we give the right of the borrower simply by fiat to fill out an affidavit and say, I defer. I mean, the mutuality goes out the window at that point. But more than that, could you help me define better what minimum monthly payment constitutes? For example, in my staid world of a 30-year fixed conforming mortgage at, I don't know, 5 3/4, I think I have now, I also pay 100% of my homeowner's insurance premium through my mortgage lender. By claiming a deferment, am I also eligible to pay 65% of my homeowner's insurance premium, for example, under minimum monthly payment, or, for example, my property taxes? Could I defer them as well?
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Ford. Well, Mr. Chair, Professor Cox has been wanting to come forward to rebut some of Mr. Deutsch's testimony. I'm wondering if you would allow that. He could also speak more authoritatively than I to this question.
That's just fine, Representative Dabney. And Mr. Deutsch, thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As we are waiting for Mr. Cox, I assume Representative Dabney, the A2 amendment is your amendment. An author's amendment, is that correct?
That's correct. And I just would, what the A2 amendment does, members, is exclude loans originated by federally chartered or state chartered banks, savings banks, and credit unions. I'd like to move that at this time.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. It's my understanding that on line 1.1, after 3612, you need to reference this as the first committee in Grossman. Are you willing to offer incorporate that into the amendment?
I am.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. That puts it in the shape that the author desires to proceed with it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. Ms. Cox, you had a response, or we're hoping to be able to answer Representative LaForce's inquiry. Ms. Cox.
Chair, thank you. I'll very briefly kind of let the opponents control the time here, but I will real quickly respond to what Mr. Deutsch said. I'll make two quick points of overview and then three very quick points in response to his specific statement. The subprime industry has collapsed. Anybody who happens to read English has figured that out. There is no substantial subprime credit out there to dry up, folks. And the response
to Mr. Cox, out of respect for the member's question, I would ask that you first address his question before providing further comment. Are you familiar with what Representative LaForce asked?
Right. Mr. Chair,
answer that question first.
Mr. Chair, Representative LaForce, I would say that's the one part of the bill, after going through the hearings, where clarification would be helpful. A background, in the subprime industry, unlike the prime industry, the norm loan is not escrow. In the subprime industry, the norm loan is a non-escrow loan, which allowed the industry to sell. The monthly payment is lower than it appeared to be to many people, which was one of the many deceptive and unfair practices that got us into this situation. So to answer your question, that is somewhat of an ambiguity. In the Senate, we added a provision after that that just said minimum monthly payment of principal and interest to clarify that. That was the one point I thought was ambiguous in the original bill. And
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Professor Cox. Is minimum monthly payment defined anywhere in the bill?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Ford, no, it's not in the House bill. In the Senate bill now it is. Or it's been clarified to mean principal and interest, not the escrow.
Assume then, under my hypothetical, if I claimed the right of deferment, then I would still be eligible or responsible for 100% of insurance, for example, and property taxes. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Phillips, The answer to your question is yes. One is already in that situation in foreclosure. All this does is extend the pre-sale foreclosure period for as long as the deferment period lasts at maximum a year. And so the legal character doesn't change any more than it does for the now tens of thousands of people that are in that period at the moment. So the answer to your question is yes.
That's going to be the force.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'll just wrap up. Professor Cox, you had indicated that you're a professor of law at the U of M Law School, and I was curious. You didn't mention that you were here on your own behalf. I'm curious, has the law school or the university endorsed your bill or your work here on behalf of it?
Ms. Cox?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative LaForest, no, I signed in for myself. I am here representing my own views of this.
Representative LaForest, anything further? Okay. And Representative Anderson, if you can just hold that thought for one moment. My intent, folks, just as the roadmap that I try to set out is my sense is that folks have a pretty good understanding and sense of where they might be at with respect to this bill. I am not going to kibosh further comments or questions from members, and I want to give Mr. Cox an opportunity to state his comments. My hope, though, we got an awful lot of folks yet on another bill before us, and out of respect for them, I'd like to try to get at this maybe by 5:40. Having said that, I'm not going to kibosh comments, but that's sort of the goal. If we can, absent objection, that'll be sort of the aim that we have. And with that, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because I serve on the Consumer and Labor Division, I had the opportunity to hear this bill once before. And at that committee hearing, Representative Dabney, you said that you would be addressing the issue of the escrow. And I just assumed that today we would come to committee and would have an amendment to clarify that matter. And I guess I don't have a whole lot of comfort when it's only in the Senate bill and it's not included in the House bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I apologize. I had thought that we would have more amendments dealing with some of these issues today because our intent is to have the House bill mirror the Senate bill. So we can work on that now if it's a simple three-word amendment, and that would be perfectly within my comfort range. Or if the bill moves forward, we can deal with this in a fancy written way in the next committee. Whatever the preference of the chair.
Representative Anderson, it's a concern that you raised. If it's, and I look to Mr. Pender as much or more so than, no offense, Mr. Cox, but Mr. Pender is our fellow. If it's possible to address it here, and the assurance is made that would be addressed, our goal would be to try to address it here. But you have, at this point, our legal beagles are taking a look at it, and I'm trying to work for a little time. Mr. Pender, is that something that you believe we can incorporate as we sit here?
Mr. Chair, I think so. I'm willing to try.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
May I suggest to Mr. Pender that on page 4, line 11, at the end of that line where it says the minimum monthly payment, we simply add a principal and interest?
Pender?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, the term is used two other places there in subdivision 2 also, so I would suggest at the end of line 4.15, we would say, for purposes of this subdivision, comma, minimum monthly payment means principal and interest.
Representative Dabney, again, that would be at the end of line 4.15, and it would add the words, for purposes of this subdivision, comma, minimum monthly payment means principal and interest. Are you willing to offer that amendment?
I would recommend that at this time.
Pender.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if it should just be payment means principal and interest rather than minimum monthly.
Mr. Chair, that would be better, and I'm willing to move whatever Mr. Pender thinks right. I should move.
Just for the sake of clarity, for the record, that will be end of line 4.15. Mr. Pender and Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney moves the following words be added, which is for purposes of the subdivision, comma, payment means principal and interest. Is everyone clear with respect to that oral amendment? Seeing that that be the case, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Are there additional questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, Representative Zellers, if you don't mind. I did have Representative Burns on the list.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
And I know you're a senior too, and you can push him around, but we should probably go to Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, thanks for having the discussion today. This is very important to your constituents, to mine, to every Minnesotan. We both probably received emails and calls and letters from people who, for all sorts of reasons, are in danger of losing their home, or they live next to a big home, and they like that. They like to be a family next door, and rather than an empty house. I do very much appreciate your analogy about the axe versus the scalpel. It would be. In listening to this, I hope maybe we can maybe sharpen the scalpel from both sides. And I think these have all been passed out to everyone. They're from the Star Tribune. We have the editorial that talks about how we should ensure that any type of limited and temporary deferment plans cover only borrowers, who are victims of shady lenders, not consumers who reach for the dream house they couldn't afford. And I think that goes to the point, I think it's Mr. Yeniguez talked about both predatory and subprime, and maybe uses a little bit interchangeably. I don't want to misquote him, but I think those probably are two very different categories. And as I understand it, the bill today deals with both categories very broadly, rather than just predatory. Issues where there were fraud, where there were people who basically were committing crimes and doing things that were unethical. But then on the other side, you have some, we have the story from Mr. Brandt, Star Tribune, that talks about people just not even making it 2 years and not leaving because they had an adjustment to their arm that put them in a category where they couldn't pay, but just for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it said some of these people might even have been straw buyers and the home buyer was committing fraud or part of a fraud scheme. So, I guess my concern broadly, and I want to hear your response to that, is we're taking into account both types of situations rather than really focusing on those people, your constituents in mind, those Minnesota consumers who really do need the help at the extent. Now, it would be no problem if there weren't maybe someone a downside. The downside is, as Mr. Deutsch comes forward and talks to us, is it affects everybody in Minnesota potentially. So I'd just like to hear your comments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burns, I read the Brandt article over the weekend with great interest, and he talks about some folks who never made a payment. They won't qualify for a deferment. This is a tightly bracketed, targeted proposal to people who are owner-occupants, not straw buyers, not investors, not speculators, who have lived in the home for 6 months, who commit to staying in the home for the duration of the deferment period, and commit to making stipulated mortgage payments. If you can't do that, you don't get the deferment.
Representative Burns?
But can you offer me some degree of certainty that a buyer who comes forward really might not have the intention of going ahead and finishing and seeing it out? Why wouldn't that person then say, well, I can now pay 66% on what my mortgage would have been, and we're kind of carrying that person along who would have walked away, who would have said, yeah, I'm like a lot of other people in Minnesota, the times have changed, I don't feel as strongly committed to paying my mortgage as been tradition. And I'm sure there's people, the vast majority of Minnesotans do not operate like that, but we're reading in the paper that some do. And again, the downside is, somebody new, a young new family coming into the state, might not have access to buying a home. And that's my concern.
Representative Burns, two comments. One, remember that this has to be initiated by the borrower. So that is in its own right is going to act as a funnel, a sales, whatever metaphor you look for. Secondly, in criminal law, if you go to trial and your sentence is waved but is hanging over your head. They refer to it as time hanging. Well, if I'm just playing games with the mortgage process, my mortgage is hanging over my head. I will be unable to reach a mutually agreeable settlement with my lender, and that 35% difference is hanging over my head, and my credit is declining even further. That's not a good scenario for anyone to walk into, and one that I think very few people will do so without very good reason to try and work out their loan in a mutually agreeable and mutually beneficial way with their lender.
Thank you. Representative Burns, and you represent
Zeller. I have a second question, and it's a little different subject. And that's the change in the contract. And it might differ, but as I see it, this change looks very much like government is coming in and modifying the contract. Where certainly one side of the equation has no ability to say yes or no. It's just now part of law that the payment terms change, that, you know, there's another year deferment. And I'd like to hear from, if you could answer that, or Professor could, and also from Mr. Deutsch, because as I heard your testimony, I think that's exactly what happened. And as you testified before, Mr. Deutsch, we've made the changes before in one county in Maryland and in the state of Georgia, and it's been disastrous. So I appreciate hearing both sides on that particular issue about government changing a contract between two private parties.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burns, in 1934, this legislature passed a moratorium. Not a deferment, but a moratorium. Mr. Deutsch mischaracterized the bill in his testimony. This is a deferment, not a moratorium. That went to the Supreme Court in a landmark case, and the United States Supreme Court found that, given the crisis at the time, did not constitute an impairment of contract. This is a much more conservative approach, much more targeted, and much more limited than that 1934 action by this same legislature. I don't believe that that qualifies as a impairment of contract. When I purchased my first home, the closer was working with me and handing me each sheet of paper and explaining what it was. And she handed me one and she said, "This one says if you stop paying the mortgage, we'll take your house." And I went, "Aha! I'm a homeowner now." Because I knew that was the essence of the contract. It didn't say, "We will take your house under the processes that exist in state law as of that date in whatever year it was." We have the right as a legislature to change the laws of the state, to modify them so that they work better for all Minnesotans. This is merely a small adaptation of our current foreclosure process, not an impairment of contract, and within our rights as a legislature.
Mr. Deutsch, to that point?
Yeah, we just come out. Yeah. Tom Deutsch, American Citizen Forum. A couple things I would note is the Supreme Court in Blaisdell in 1934 did not find it was an abrogation of contracts. What they found was that it was not a taking requiring a repayment by the government to the borrower. That is a completely different question as to whether it is an abrogation of contract. In that case, and I would contend in this case, putting aside the 35% reduction, let's talk about that separately, just a mere moratorium is a change in the contract. It's changing the expectations of the people who purchase those securities backed by those mortgages. Now let's introduce the second feature here that is very different than Blaisdell, and that is that you're requiring a lender to accept 35% less than what they were expected to make for that entire year. Whether that borrower capitalizes that arrearage or not is irrespective. They are being told by the legislature, you will change that contract. You will expect less than what you were supposed to get under that contract. There is absolutely, unambiguously, no way that can be interpreted as not abrogating contract. And the secondary market investors and the lenders will fully view that as abrogating contract.
Thank you, Mr. Deutsch. Does anybody know what penultimate means? Is that second to last? Second to last? Representative Zeller, who's the ranking member or lead or whatever we call you on this committee, go on penultimate, and then we'll give the chief author the sure. final word?
I just had one question for Representative Dabney on the last page. That catchy little phrase in there, no offense to the attorneys in the room. Last page 6.17 in reasonable attorney fees. Again, with all deference to the chair and any other trial lawyers in the room, what are we have not defined what reasonable attorney fees are in there, and if there's the common language for that, that's fine. That would be my question: is what is a reasonable attorney fee when you're talking about the foreclosure process? And
Representative Dabney, I don't know, let Mr. Chairman, no offense, Representative Dabney, but I thought we were done with the... Then you changed it to a representative. Okay, yeah, the question, then you're not then ultimate. All right, anyway, that quad ultimate or something like that. So, all right, I'll go back and forth. Take the representative Dabney, then we'll give Representative Dabney a second and final word.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, as the attorneys on the committee and probably half the people in the room know, it's defined by Minnesota Rule 119 in the Minnesota Rules of General Practice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zellers.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Dabney, again, laudable goal. If you're looking at the mountain of data and paperwork and emails and stuff, you've struck on a consumer problem. But what I'm struck by, and actually reading up on your bill, Representative Dabney, I kind of scared me in a way, because this isn't about exactly what you were talking about, and of all places, I'm going to have to quote the New York Times and the Star Tribune. So if I burst into fire, I literally burst into flame at any minute here. And I think we've addressed this before. It's from the New York Times. It's the youwalkaway.com scenario. It's a company out there for $1,000, $995. They'll work with you to walk away from your home. Some of the quotes in here from some of the folks that were used for the story are what frightened me, and this is what I believe, honestly, the bill could have the consequence of doing. The one gentleman, I won't reveal his name, said, "The house is now the lender's problem. They took the negativity out of my life. I was stressing out for nothing." Basically, what we're doing is, the one of the folks in here from, I think it was Wellesley College, said this isn't like a mortgage like you and I would see it as a marriage. You know, you buy a house, you're going to, you know, keep that mortgage for 30 years, you're going to pay it off, and you own your house. But there's a culture shift in here, and the story goes on, and I'll be happy to provide you copies of it, but the... I'm too close to the mic. At the end of it, this gentleman who had gone to this You Walk Away company, he said, and I quote, "I know in a few years my credit's going to be fine. If I want to get another house, it's going to be there. I'm not the only one who went through this. I know I'm working the system, but you have to do what you got to do. There's always loopholes." And what we're creating here is a loophole for some, an arguably necessary, I wouldn't say arguably necessary, some sort of a device for those who want to stay in their house. But we're also creating a loophole, and the money isn't going to just come from the banks or come from the lenders. It's going to come from us. And if there isn't credit out there to be had, we're all going to suffer. If we have a bunch of homes that are going to be foreclosed upon and just walked away, and the bank's left holding the bag, it's going to come from some of us. It's going to come from all of us who are going to have a loan. And Mr. Rolnick, our favorite reference when it comes to education, said we should actually be a bit unprecedented, and the government should move forward with caution. Representative Dabney, you know, unfortunately, I don't know if this went through all the long and drawn out processes that some of the other bills have that made them all fit quite a bit better and a lot better in some cases. And unfortunately, I think you're proceeding down a path that, in good conscience, I just cannot support. And I think it'd be a similar abdication of our responsibility if I didn't recommend that this bill be vetoed by the governor, because it is going to absolutely freeze our market, freeze our state out. And when it comes to lending, when it comes to providing credit for the people who, you know, quite honestly, we're claiming to help in here, those who have low income or have no credit at all because they've moved here for the first time, we're going to freeze them out of the home buying process. And that, to me, is just too much to bear in this situation. And I not only will not support the bill, but we'll have to recommend, with all due deference, a veto of this. And as someone said, well, you guys say that all the time and mean it. At some point, you should mean it. And this will represent Dabney. We mean it.
Representative Billy, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Representative Ellery. I ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Ellery. With that, Representative Ellery renews his motion that House File 3612 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Both opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Thank you all who came. Mr. Deutsch, thank you for taking the time to visit with us this afternoon and share your thoughts and concerns. I'm sure the chief author has taken note of it as well. He has the other testimony. With that, Representative Lilly, will you take folks, by the way, one thing I know, people have obligations. This is a specially scheduled meeting in order to meet deadlines. We won't have anything further with folks that came on 3612. You're welcome to head on out. I just wanted to lay out things for our members. If people have other places that they need to go, feel free. We've reached a quorum. I will represent to you that all of the amendments, and there are several, to the Department of Commerce bill have been vetted with everybody that they need to be vetted. There is no opposition. If there is any opposition from any member of this committee on any amendment, I will withdraw the amendment. That's how certain I want to be that we have a bill that is non-controversial with respect to the Department of Commerce. And with that, Atkins will move House File 3783 be recommended pass and referred to the floor. There are amendments, and with that, I'll turn it over to Representative Willie.
I won't be going there, James. I won't be going
there. Jackins,
I have several amendments, Mr. Chair. I would start with the 808-1405. This is the department's amendment of several things that just should have been in the bill and not. It's the office amendment they put on the shape. I wish to proceed.
Any questions regards to 808-1405? Seeing none? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Next
amendment adopted.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's the AOA 1426. Again, this is the Department of Commerce. It's literally just a section that should have been referred to with regard to group plans. And I would offer the AOA 1426 amendment.
Any questions regards to the 808-1426 amendment? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be possible for Representative Atkins to explain some of these amendments?
Absolutely, and with that, I would say, folks, you know who we are. Anybody, come on now. Actually, Representative Anderson, I'm happy to, if you'll give me the deference to put the bill, put it in the shape in which I'd like to proceed, we can go back and pin down any questions that anybody has on any of the amendments, if that's all right with you. All right, then let's stick around up here, because we'll take the questions after we put it. But I would renew my motion, AOA 1426, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Is it the AOA 1426 or AOA 1436?
36. 26 is.
This one is the 1426, Representative Dabney. There are two.
Okay.
And I intend to move both of them.
In the packet, not the ones just distributed to us. My apologies.
Some are in the packet and some are being handed out as we're working through this. Everybody have that? Everybody have that?
Uh-huh. Sure, I do intend to go back over all of them. I just want to get the bill in the shape that the author desires to see so that we can respect people's time this afternoon.
All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the AOA 1436 amendment.
Any questions to that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move the H3783A3 amendment.
Any questions in regards to that amendment?
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move the AOA 1434 amendment.
Any questions regarding that amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment adopted.
Well, Chair, I would move the AOA 1429 amendment.
Any questions for that amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Wow, you're welcome.
Amendment passes.
Mr. Chair, finally, I would move the AOA 1428 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I understand there's some problems with this. All those in favor of this amendment? Oh, excuse me. Representative Anderson.
I'm missing two of the amendments to last year. Oh, good. And then there's one
to go back. Can staff please check with Representative Anderson to make sure she has all the copies available as we... Representative Anderson, are you comfortable with passing this and then discussing it as we go through?
Well, it's kind of pointless. I mean, we're just going through the amendments and you're asking for questions and we've had all the 5 seconds to use the amendments. And I'm fine to, in deference to you, but I mean, let's be realistic here and realize that we're not going to have any questions if we don't have 5 seconds to look at the amendments
themselves. Okay, that was exactly the point. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I'm just kidding. Well, I would hold off on the AOA 1428 amendment until it's distributed. With that, Mr. Chair, the first question that came up relative to the amendments was the section 1426 amendment, and I do have my former friend here who can address that issue.
Please state your name for the record, sir.
Mr. Chair, Manny Munson-Vidala, Deputy Commissioner for the Market Insurance Division of the Department of Commerce. Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm going to kick this to John Gross, who's our health policy specialist. He'll be able to explain the function.
Go ahead, sir.
Please state your name and members of the committee. My name is John Gross. I'm Director of Healthcare Policy with the Department of Commerce. This is 1426 is an amendment dealing with the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. We're trying to expand the ways of the Commissioner of Commerce when we have to replace some of the 5 public board members to be able to get a more of a better, broader way of getting those members we can pick from. We've had a difficult time in the past, so this is just expanding in such a way that we can now look at somebody that's currently covered by either a group policy or an individual policy.
Thank you, sir. Jackins, are we kind of moving through?
Yeah, if folks, as we go through these, if anybody has any questions, just let me know relative to the amendments. 1436 just allows for Medicare plans online, recognizing that we're in the 21st century.
Let's just stop and see if there's any questions. Any questions?
Which one
is it? I would say, the 1436 amendment. Mr. Chair, the A3 amendment was brought to me by Mr. Franzen. It is with regard to the Joint Underwriting Authority and MedMail. Again, it has proven to be non-controversial. No objection in the department. It's my understanding that they are fine with.
Thank you, sir. Any questions on the A3? Seeing none, go ahead.
The 1434 is a document with respect to the purchase of a vehicle. I won't make any bones about this one. What it does is it will make a car slightly more expensive. What it does is that for, I believe it's roughly 10 years, there has been no increase in the document fee that auto dealers are allowed to assess when they, for the document process. This simply has not kept up with the times. The $50 fee that is currently authorized under law was fine at the time. Times have changed, 10 years have gone by, and $75 at this point is more appropriate. Again, I'm not aware of any opposition to that, nor am I aware of any opposition from the department. Mr. Chair, the 1429.
I'm sorry, just any questions on the 1434? And that, again, is brought by the department. Chair Atkins.
I believe it was from the auto dealers and shared with the department, and there was no objection by any.
Representative Maury. Representative Maury, please use your microphone.
Sometimes we prefer when he doesn't.
This is all the does that send us to the tax committee under the
Chair Atkins?
Mr. Chair,
he has a tax thing.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, it's my understanding that it is already in law. This does change the figure slightly. If that requires a stop in tax committee, I guess that's where we would go. But I would rather not, and we'll see what the chair of the tax committee opts to do.
Any further questions to this? Seeing none, go ahead, Chair Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The AOA 1429 amendment is the... I'm sorry. I just had a reason why we don't have to go to the tax committee on 1434. It simply changes the cap, not the fee. That should answer all your questions. The 1429 is brought to me by Mr. Skazinski. It's with regard to limited broker licensees. On behalf of, I believe this was with respect to Breezy Point, just makes it, and again, no objection has been raised to this amendment, just makes it simpler for them to do business, and the department, as I understand it, has not raised an objection to it.
Any questions in regards to that amendment? Seeing none, go ahead, Chair Atkins.
Finally, and I would move this one, Representative Anderson and members, do you have the AOA 1428 amendment at this point? And I will tell you, it references insurable property in cities and applies it to a city of the second class only with approval granted by the commissioner. Mr. Marsh, Marcus Marsh, brought this to me. Apparently, our best efforts weren't quite getting the job done, and this just makes this provision a little bit more user-friendly for those cities. And again, the department, my understanding is that they do not have any objection to it. It does, good point, it affects a single city that wants to take advantage of this.
Thank you. Any questions? And again, our apologies to Representative Anderson and others for the taste there. Confusion.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I would, assuming there's no objection, I would move the AOA 1428 amendment.
Any questions for that amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. So we have the bill as amended before us.
And I'm sitting here with brain trust, Mr. Chair. I'll just stand for any questions or concerns. The major changes I wouldn't even call them major changes. There's no controversy, as I understand it. There's no objection from anyone. The department and all of the interested parties that are affected by this are on board. I would stand for any questions. Otherwise, I'll just renew my motion.
Mr. Chair. Representative Tilbury.
I have a 3783A6 amendment that I'd like to put out there. This particular amendment...
Just 1 second, please, sir. Do we... Representative Tilbury, can you... Is it... do we have a copy of it?
Yep, everyone should have a copy of the A6 amendment.
I don't believe we do.
Is this in the second batch that they handed out?
A6?
A6.
Looks like I do. It's a two-page document. It's being passed out right now, I believe. Representative Tilbury, go ahead and tell us about it, please.
Well, 2 years ago, the state of Minnesota enacted legislation governing the sale of consumer goods and home service contracts and to entities that provide them. The legislation adopted national standards in place for this industry in a majority of states. At that time, Minnesota's existing law governing service contracts covering vehicles not updated. This is an attempt to update that. I have something that was similar to this that passed out over warranties and so on. And what it does is it allows people who are offering service contracts to be able to handle requests based on the reserve amounts and so on that they have. That's all it really is entailing. It's the consumer protection on this amendment.
Chair Atkins?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, that is acceptable. And I'd urge support of the A6 amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tilbury, you said you had a bill that was moving, or did move?
Last question, excuse me, Mr. Chair. Representative Zellers, I have one on warranty.
Can you talk into the microphone, or I don't know if we're losing noise in here. Go ahead, please, Mr. Representative Tilbury.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, I had something similar to that had passed out last session. It was on warranty. If you recall, etched glass and so on, and I'm sure it was at the tip of your memory. That was an
exciting bill?
Exciting bill. That's the words I was looking at.
Representative Zellers?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And because we're not dealing with etched glass but motor vehicle manufacturers, I'm just curious that since we hadn't seen this before, and it's dealing with service contracts, Mr. Chairman and members, not saying I'm not in favor of it, but without having a little bit better look at it.
Chair Atkins.
Representative Zellers, again, I gave you my word that if you have any problems with anything, I might make sure I phone. But out of fairness to the folks who bought it, you may want to just hear the brief overview, sure, and then you can make a decision.
I appreciate that. Phone a friend, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Peter Twain, and I'm here today representing the Service Contract Industry Council, which is the national trade representing the sellers of service contracts countrywide. We represent members such as GE, AIG, BMW, Chrysler, the major auto riders. What this amendment does is it completes the work that we started in 2005 when this legislature enacted a comprehensive scheme for regulating service contracts. At that time, we left standing the existing regulation that applied to automobile service contracts, and we had two systems in place. What this amendment does is complete that work by including the regulation of automobile service contracts into Chapter 59B, which is the comprehensive scheme for regulating service contracts. Mr. Chairman, that's the effect of this amendment.
Thank you, sir. Representative Zellers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that.
Any further?
Mr. Chair, I think we're all fine. The department's fine with the refined. I'm sorry, amendment.
Representative Burns, I'm sorry.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is answered. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, any further questions to the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendments adopted.
The final two amendments we should now have, they were brought to you with the February A1 and the A2 amendments. But I want to assure the members that they have them again before we proceed. Is there anyone that does not? I would ask Mr. Morrison, who brought these amendments to me. I would move the A1 amendment. And let him speak to it briefly in terms of the effectiveness. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Andrew Morrison. I'm the General Counsel of the Self-Insured Security Fund. This is the equivalent to MIGA for self-insurers and workers' compensation. What this does is we have members who have exited more than 10 years ago. Rather than dealing with them and making them purchase a actuarial report, which is very expensive. They've been gone for 10 years. Their workers' compensation pay is very minimal. This allows us to simplify the exit process. It gives our members a final assessment, gets rid of them from our system, and the only people affected by this are the members of the security fund. And we have had no opposition to this amendment.
Sure.
I'll answer questions.
Okay. Any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? A1 is adopted.
Mr. Chair, finally, I would move the A2 amendment. That's also one that Mr. Morris and I have worked together on. Mr. Chair, members, for this amendment, I represent the Builders Group, a commercial self-insurance group, workers' compensation in the state of Minnesota.
regulated by the Department of Commerce. What this does, as the department pointed out, is save trees. Number one, within 5 days, it used to be we had to tell folks of a new member before they were adopted when we grew. My group now has over 1,000 members. This just allows us 5 days to get the paperwork to the department. The second is that if a member is delinquent, we used to have to start proceeding against them within 15 days. We are now changing that to 30 days, which is consistent with the insurance industry as a whole, before we prosecute them for not paying the premium. And three, what this does is, when we have members, the Department of Commerce wanted to see financials from each and every member. When we were small, that made sense. Now that this group has over 1,000 members, we don't need to meet the minimum requirements by sending 1,000 reports to Commerce. What this does is allow us to meet the minimum requirements by just our big members. And once we meet the minimum requirements, we don't have to file all the other 900 or 800 or 700 forms with the Department of Commerce, because we've already met the requirements. And that's our amendment. Mr. Chair, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Jackson?
I just asked for your support of the A2 amendment.
Mr. Atkins has moved the A2 amendment. Any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? A2 is adopted. Okay. Any final comments to your bill, sir, as amended? With that, Chair Atkins moves that House File 3783 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the House floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? You're both faster. With that, we have to do a little housekeeping here. Sorry, we need to reconsider House File 3229 as amended. Okay, so we need to send it to finance. Okay, so we're going to bring up House File 3229 as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move that it be reconsidered.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Mr.
Chair,
I would move.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 3922 be recommended to pass. What's that? Yeah, 3229, that's what I said. We recommend pass and refer to the Committee on
Finance. Any questions regards to that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Yes.
It's on its way to finance. With that, our next meeting is March 18th at 4 p.m. in the basement. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody, and also Thanksgiving. Super holiday. That was our